The unique challenges of very light sport aviation. Is the FAA even aware? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the ANN special feature. Thanks for the download. Today, you'll hear the fourth and final segment of a long conversation I had a few days ago with Rod Hightower, the new president of the Experimental Aircraft Association, effective September 7th. Yesterday, we got into the special challenges faced by enthusiasts of very light sport aircraft, and Rod assured us it's on EAA's agenda. But does the FAA even notice the problems caused to this segment by what appear to be warring internal bureaus, which are on completely different pages?
You know, I have to, from what I know about the folks that I am meeting in my new role at the FAA, and I have to say it is on their radar. And I'd have to say that just like anything in life, there's a blend of depth of understanding, and there's also a blend of perceptions about that particular part of the market. No question, and everybody in the aviation world should be fully aware that one of the priorities at the FAA right now is the safety record of amateur-built aircraft. Amateur-built aircraft's pretty broad categorization, right? Would you agree?
I would.
So when you take a broad categorization and call it amateur-built aircraft, there's a lot of dynamics that are in play there that to the uninitiated or the unaware or underaware might not make sense at first. FAA is very concerned about the safety record there. On the other hand, the amateur-built category is the fastest-growing segment of aviation. Now, would you, if you had asked me 30 years ago that the fleet of aircraft would consist of the size of that fleet would be 20% content of amateur-built aircraft, I would have said you're crazy 30 years ago. That's, in fact, the reality today. 20% of the fleet, amateur-built aircraft, and growing at a faster rate than the rest of the fleet. So what may look to some like a growing accident rate is, in fact, reflective of that's a very high-growth part of the aviation segment. So you have to balance that out. You have to know what you're looking at. You have to make sure that your empirical data supports fact-based decision-making. If you have a hypothesis, make sure you test it before you can prove it's true. Mm-hmm. So my message to Randy Babbitt and his staff, peel the onion a few more layers. Get your teams familiar with that category of flying and that category and segment of aviation before you pass judgment about some of the things that you think you're seeing. Make sure you truly understand it before you pass judgment about it, and certainly against it.
One of the things that's frustrated me looking at this, and this leads me into an area I hadn't planned to talk to you about, but I will ask this question. I mean, I spent probably 9 or 10 months reading accident reports every day before I went to ground school for the first time. I had to know, you know, what is it that happens? Do propellers fall off? Do wings fall off? Or what? And the thing that hit me like a ton of bricks was stupid pilot tricks. 80 or 85% to me of accidents looked as though they were caused by an identifiable human decision that went wrong. Is the FAA way too focused on the hardware, especially when it comes to light sport aircraft, and not focused enough on maybe some gaps in human factors education?
You know, I want to tell you this, and I want to compliment Randy Babbitt and his staff for their awareness in that very topic. I would have to say that I don't think they're over-focused on the airframe side. If you look at the way that they organize the FAA, you would certainly look at it and say, boy, it sure looks like they're over-focused in that area, because that's been the core, if you will, of how the FAA has regulated over its lifetime. If you take a look at the reality of stupid pilot tricks, and by the way, we've all seen them, we've all understood the consequence of them, and almost all of us are embarrassed by them. And I say almost because the guys that do it don't seem to be too embarrassed by it. Smart people sometimes do stupid pilot tricks. Some of that is judgment, and in my particular opinion, you can't really teach judgment. You can show people what it can lead to, and let them self-discover that maybe the decisions they were taking at one point in their flying life might be different at a later point in their flying life. And I compliment you. You have gone out there and you've researched accident data. A lot of pilots do that. I think the better pilots do that. They want to understand what can hurt them. They want to understand where are the A-side items on the Pareto chart that you really need to be aware of. Every time I check out in a new type of airplane, whether I'm going upscale or whether I'm going downscale, those airplanes have unique characteristics. But more importantly, those airplanes' unique characteristics can get you in different types of trouble that you may or may not have experience with on the previous equipment and flying experiences that you've been performing. So training, pilot education, type-specific programs that bring you from an entry point to a very safe exit point with understanding the characteristics of not only that airplane, but the applications that airplane you will find yourself in that airplane are powerful ways to take a pilot from whatever level they may be at in current state to a much more proficient and safer future state. One of my personal objectives at EAA is to make certain that for amateur-built aircraft, we are going to move the needle on that safety record. And I know that that goal happens to be perfectly aligned with the FAA's goals and objectives. So, Cintron, if you're listening to this tape, you're my friend, and we can partner up together, and we can move that needle together. If you go your way and I go my way, I can assure the aviation community we will not move that needle. So if we work closely together and collaborate well, I'm certain we can have a favorable impact on the amateur-built accident rate. I'm certain of it. And pilot training is going to be the right type of pilot training is going to be a substantial component of the successful outcome.
Well, and EAA is remarkably positioned in this thing, too, because human factors, when you talk about experimental aircraft, expand outside from just piloting to building and, in some cases, even aircraft selection decisions, you know, being appropriate for the application.
You know, you're so right about that, and I'll tell you, you know, I've been flying for 31 years. You know, I've flown high-performance airplanes and hard IFR, and, of course, I've flown some small airplanes on beautiful, calm winds, sunny days. But there is a very, very common, there's some key elements to identifying successful outcomes, and those are pilots who are very well aware of the limitations of themselves and their airframes. They're also very well aware of the capabilities by which those aircraft can lure you into some of those dangerous situations. Those self-aware, highly self-aware pilots who have good experience, good decision-making, good judgment, combined with good education and training, are some of the safest pilots you will ever meet. And when you talk to those, when I check out on a new type, one of my favorite dialogues, if the guy that's checking me out on the type hasn't brought it up within the first 5 minutes, I'm going to bring it up. I always ask him the same question. What are the things that will create trouble for me in this airplane? Mm-hmm. And I, as an owner of a P210, I can tell you that there are some things about a P210, the top three things that you need to pay attention to. Well, you know what? If that instructor is not bringing that up in the first 5 minutes of the relationship with somebody checking out in that type with that instructor, then you need to go find another instructor. Or that instructor needs to be brought up to speed and put himself in a higher level of performance in his responsibilities and safely checking somebody out in that type.
Does the EAA have a role in managing instruction? More with EAA President Rod Hightower in a moment. I'm Paul Plagg. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News. Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Piperjet.
Pipersport.
Pipermatch.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature and the final segment of my interview with new EAA President Rod Hightower. If one key to safety in experimental aviation has to do with instruction, does EAA have a role there?
Absolutely. You know, there's an interesting dynamic about EAA as it relates to flight instructors. First of all, do I think we have a very good relationship with the flight instructor community? The answer is absolutely yes, I do. Do I think that our past relationships with NAFI could have been better? could have yielded more value, could have done something different to move a certain set of needles that I know that EAA is capable of doing? The answer is, of course, absolutely it is. I think my message to flight instructors is this. If you're a flight instructor and you have a high level of expectation of not only yourself, but you have a high level of commitment to successfully training, educating, and keeping the pilots that you begin relationships with growing forward and safe, growing forward and utilizing their aircraft to the maximum of their potential, going forward and making sure that they will experience and enjoy that aircraft to the maximum extent possible, or certainly to the degree that they choose to or want to, then you are probably in the 50% range of flight instructors. If you're looking for the next ride, the ride on the right seat of the next regional jet, you might want to reevaluate what your commitment to your student really is. Because most of us that watch that number, and I'm going to take Craig Fuller at his word and buy his number of 70 to 80% of people who start with a student pilot certificate don't make it to private pilot completion. I'm going to buy that number. I don't know if it's an exact number or not, but I'm going to buy that story because it is directionally correct. If you look at one of the dynamics that create that incompletion, it is the instructor, not just in the individual characteristics of the instructor's abilities to teach, mentor, and develop and finish, but also in that flight instructor's characteristics to make an aviator the best that an aviator can be. So if that instructor, those instructors that have that rare combination of commitment, capability, skill, and talent to produce high-performing aviators, those instructors are the type of people who need to train the trainer. They need to mentor, coach, and guide other instructors. And I think that's been a shortcoming in the flight instructor community.
Well, it is looked at as a way to fill time between jobs at the airline, or a way to get your first job at the airline, or something to do in semi-retirement. And maybe, I hate to say this, maybe we're not paying these guys enough.
You know, I don't think you can ever pay a flight instructor enough, but I don't think you can ever pay a school teacher enough either. And, you know, they have a pretty common capability in terms of education. And the gift that they give to the people that they touch is enormous because it affects that person, the rest of that person's life, the rest of that person's flying life, I might want to say. So I don't think you can pay them enough. But there is an economic model at work there that probably needs to be rethought. So if you want to think about the innovation side of EAA, you know, you can I can give you a little bit of a glimpse into our think tank activity that's underway right now. There are some key needles out there that we are going to move, and one of them is this topic that we're talking about right here. So you can just keep that in mind, and you can ask me about it in a year or two.
All right. Well, Rod, you have been very generous with your time, and I think it's important for our listeners to get to know you at this level. And I don't know any other way to do that other than through a conversation. I don't think you can do it through print. I don't think it's possible to have the frankness of a discussion through EAA's internal media that you can have with me. And I hope it's been of value to our listeners, and I hope it has been to you too. And I'd love to stay in touch and find out how these things go.
You have my commitment, Paul, to stay in touch. First and foremost, I can tell that you and your organization's commitment is to the good of aviation. So you're on high ground. And I really appreciate people who are on high ground, who are a big supporter of the cause. There is a substantial impact on the success of this country with aviation. And I want to see that it grows. I want to see that it's vibrant. And then it invites people in. So if you're on that camp, I'm in your camp.
Rod Hightower is president of the Experimental Aircraft Association. I hope you feel you got to know Rod and get a feel for where his priorities are over the last 4 days. Find out more about the organization at EAA.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.